It was damp. And with the demise of Mr. Pounder, there were indeed rats. The stone looked old, too. Of course, all stone was old, Agnes told herself, but this had grown old as masonry. Ankh-Morpork had been there for thousands of years. Where other cities were built on clay or rock or loam, Ankh-Morpork was built on Ankh-Morpork. People constructed new buildings on the remains of earlier ones, knocking out a few doorways here and there to turn ancient bedrooms into cellars. The stairs petered out on damp flagstones in almost total darkness. Perdita thought it looked romantic and gothic. Agnes thought it looked gloomy. If someone used this place, they'd need lights, wouldn't they? And a fumbling search confirmed it. She found a candle and some matches tucked into a niche in the wall. That was sobering for Agnes and Perdita together. Someone used this prosaic book of matches with a picture of a grinning troll on the cover, and this piece of perfectly ordinary candle. Perdita would have preferred a flaming torch. Agnes didn't know what she would have preferred. It was just that if a mysterious person came and sang in the walls and moved around the place like a ghost and possibly killed people, well, you'd prefer a bit more style than a box of matches with the picture of a grinning troll on it. That was the sort of thing a murderer would use. She lit the candle and, in two minds about it all, went on into the dark. Chocolate Delight with Special Secret Sauce was a great success, and heading down the little red lane as though hot-wired. "More, Mr. Salzeller?" said Bucket. "This really is first-class stuff, isn't it? I must congratulate Mrs. Clamp." "There is a certain piquancy, I must say," said the Director of Music. "How about you, Signor Basilica?" "Lady Esmeralda?"
"I don't mind if I do," said Granny, passing her plate across.
"I'm sure I detect a hint of cinnamon," said the interpreter, a brown ring around his mouth. "Indeed, and possibly just a trace of nutmeg," said Mr. Bucket.
"I thought cardamom," said Salzeller.
"Creamy, yet spicy," said Bucket, his eyes unfocused slightly, and curiously warming.
Granny stopped chewing and looked down suspiciously at her plate. And then she sniffed at her spoon.
Is it just me, or is it a trifle warm in here?" said Bucket.
Salzeller had gripped the arms of his chair. His forehead glistened.
"Do you think we could open a window?" he said. "I feel a little strange."
"Yes, by all means," said Bucket. Salzeller half rose, and then a preoccupied expression suffused his features. He sat down suddenly.
"No, I rather believe I'll just sit quietly for a moment," he said.
"Oh, dear," said the interpreter. There was a hint of vapour around his collar. Basilica tapped him politely on the shoulder, grunted hopefully, and made "pass it here" motions in the direction of the half-finished dish of chocolate pudding.
"Mm-hmm,"
he said. "Oh, dear," said the interpreter. Mr. Bucket ran a finger around his collar. Sweat was beginning to roll down his face. Basilica gave up on his stricken colleague and reached across in a businesslike way to hook the dish with his fork.
Yes, said Bucket, trying to keep his eyes away from Granny.
"Yes, indeed," said Salzeller, his voice coming from a long way away.
"Oh, dear," said the interpreter, his eyes watering.
"I'm yes, dear mio, forgotten tsuk fdug."
Signor Basilica upended the rest of the special secret sauce onto his plate and carefully scraped out the dish with his spoon, holding it upside down to reach the last little bit.
"The weather has been a little cool of late," Bucket managed. "Very, very cold, in fact."
Enrico held the sauce dish up to the light and regarded it critically in case there was any drop hiding in a corner.
"Snow, ice, frost, that sort of thing," said Salzeller. "Yes, indeed. Coldness of all descriptions, in fact."
"Yes, yes," said Bucket gratefully. "And at a time like this, I think it is very, very important to remember the names of, say, any number of boring and hopefully chilly things. Wind, glaciers, icicles."
"No, not icicles."
"Oh,"
said the interpreter, and slumped forward into his plate. His head hit a spoon, which cartwheeled into the air and bounced off Enrico's head. Salzeller started to whistle under his breath and pound the arm of his chair. Bucket blinked. In front of him was the water jug. The cold water jug. He reached out. Oh, dear me, what can I say? I seem to have spilled it all over myself, he said, through the rising clouds of steam. What a butterfingers I am, to be sure. I shall ring for Mrs. Ogg to bring us another one.
Yes, indeed, said Salzella, and perhaps you would care to do it soon. I am also feeling very accident-prone.
Basilica, still chewing, lifted his interpreter's head off the table and carefully tipped the man's unfinished pudding into his own plate.
In fact, said Salzella, I think I shall just have a brisk, have a nice cold. If you would excuse me a minute.
He pushed back his chair and fled the room in a kind of crouching gait. Mr. Bucket glistened.
I'll just be back quite shortly, he said, and scurried away.
There was silence, broken only by the scrape of Signor Basilica's spoon and a sizzling noise from the interpreter. Then the tenor belched baritone.
Whoops! Pardon, Michael Atchian, he said. Oh, damn!
He appeared to notice the depleted table for the first time. He shrugged and smiled hopefully at Granny.
Is there a cheese board, do you think? He said.
The door flew open and Nanny Ogg burst in, holding a bucket of water in both hands.
All right, that's...
she began and then stopped. Granny dabbed primly at the corners of her mouth with her napkin.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Ogg, she said.
Nanny looked at the empty dish in front of Basilica.
Or perhaps some fruit, said the tenor. A few nuts.
How much has he had? She whispered.
Best part of half, said Granny, but I don't reckon it's having any effect on account of not touching the sides.
Nanny turned her attention to Granny's plate.
How about you? She said.
Two helpings, said Granny, with extra sauce. Githa Og, may you be forgiven.
Nanny looked at her with something like admiration in her eyes.
You ain't even sweating, she said.
Granny picked up her water glass and held it at arm's length. After a few seconds, the water began to boil.
All right, you're getting really good, I've got to admit it, said Nanny. I reckon I should have to get up real early to put one over on you.
I reckon you should never go to sleep, said Granny.
Sorry, Esme.
Signor Basilica, at a loss to follow the conversation, realised with reluctance that the meal was probably over.
Absolutely superb, he said. I just love that pudding, Mrs. Ogg.
I should just jolly well expect you did, Henry Slug, said Nanny.
Henry carefully removed a clean handkerchief from his pocket, put it over his face, and leaned back in his chair. The first snore occurred a few seconds later.
He's easy to have around, isn't he? Said Nanny. Eat, sleep, and sing. You certainly know where you are with him. I've found Gribor, by the way. He's still following Walter Plinge around.
Her expression became a little defiant.
Say what you like, young Walter's all right by me if Gribor likes him.
Granny sighed.
Githa, Gribor would like Norris the eyeball-eating maniac of Quirm if he knew how to put food in a bowl.
And now she was lost. She'd done her best not to be. As Agnes had walked through each dank room, she'd thoughtfully taken note of details. She'd carefully remembered right and left turns. And yet she was lost. Here and there were steps down to lower cellars, but the water level was so high that it was lapping at the first step, and it stank. The candle burned with a greenish-blue edge to the flame. Somewhere, said Perdita, there was the secret room. If there wasn't a huge and glittering secret cavern, what on earth was life for? There had to be a secret room. A room full of giant candles and enormous stalagmites. But it certainly isn't here, said Agnes. She felt a complete idiot. She'd gone through the mirror looking for... well, she wasn't quite prepared to admit what she might have been looking for, but whatever it was, it certainly wasn't this. She'd have to shout for help. Of course, someone might hear... but that was always a risk when you shouted for help. She coughed.
Hello?
The water gurgled.
Help? Is there anyone there?
A rat ran over her foot. Oh, yes, she thought bitterly, with Perdita's part of her brain. If Christine had come down here, there probably would have been some great glistening cave and delicious danger.
The world saved up rats and smelly cellars for Agnes because she had such a wonderful personality. Anyone? More rats scuttled across the floor. There was a faint squeaking from the side passages. Hello? She was lost in some cellars, with the candle getting shorter by the second. The air was foul, the flagstones were slippery. No one knew where she was. She could die down here. She could be... Eyes glowed in the darkness. One was green-yellow, the other pearly-white. A light appeared behind them. Something was coming along the passageway, casting long shadows. Rats tumbled over themselves in their panic to get away. Agnes tried to press herself into the stone.
"Hello, Miss Perdita ex-mit?"
A familiar shape juddered out of the darkness just behind Grebo. It was all knees and elbows. It carried a sack over one shoulder and held a lantern in its other hand. Something fled from the darkness. The terror leached out of it.
"You don't want to be down here, Miss Nit, with all the rats. Walter, got to do Mr. Pounder's job now. The poor man has passed away. I am a person of all jobs. No peace for the wicked. But Mr. Grebo just hits them with his paws and they're off to rat heaven in a jiff."
"Walter," repeated Agnes out of sheer relief.
"Come for an explore, have you? These old tunnels goes all the way to the river. You have to keep your wits about you not to get lost down here. Want to come back with me?"
It was impossible to be frightened of Walter Plinge. Walter attracted a number of emotions, but terror wasn't among them.
Yes, said Agnes. I got lost. Sorry.
Grebo sat down and started to wash himself in what Agnes considered to be a supercilious way. If a cat could snigger, he would be sniggering.
"Now I've got a full sack, I have to take it to Mr. Gimlet's shop," announced Walter, turning around and loping out of the cellar without bothering to see if she was following him. "We get a halfpenny each, which is not to be sneezed at. The dwarfs think a rat is a good meal, which only goes to show it would be a strange world if we were all alike."
It seemed a ridiculously short journey to the foot of some different stairs, which had a well-used look to them. "Have you ever seen the ghost, Walter?" said Agnes, as Walter put his foot on the first step. He didn't turn around.
"It is wrong to tell lies."
Yes, so I believe. So, when did you last see the ghost?
I last saw the ghost in the big room in the ballet school.
Really? What did he do?
Walter paused for a moment, and then the words came out altogether.
He ran off.
He stamped up the stairs in a way that suggested very emphatically that the exchange was over. Grebo sneered at Agnes and followed him. The stairs went up just one flight and came out through a trapdoor backstage. She had been lost only a door or two from the real world. No one noticed her emerge, but then no one noticed her at all. They just assumed that she'd be around when she was needed. Walter Plinge had already loped off, in something of a hurry. Agnes hesitated. They probably wouldn't even notice she wasn't there, right up to the point when Christine opened her mouth. He hadn't wanted to answer, but Walter Plinge spoke when spoken to, and she had a feeling that he wasn't able to lie. Telling lies would be being bad. She'd never seen the ballet school. It wasn't far backstage, but it was a world of its own. The dancers issued from it every day like so many very thin and twittering sheep, under the control of elderly women who looked as though they breakfasted on pickled limes. It was only after she'd timidly asked a few questions of the stagehands that she'd realised that the girls had joined the ballet because they'd wanted to. She had seen the dancers' dressing room, where 30 girls washed and changed in a space rather smaller than Bucket's office. It bore the same relationship to ballet as compost did to roses. She looked around again. Still no one had paid any attention to her. She headed for the school. It was up a few steps, along a fetid corridor lined with notice boards and smelling of ancient grease. A couple of girls fluttered past. You never saw just one. They went around in groups like mayflies. She pushed open the door and stepped into the school. Reflections of reflections of reflections. There were mirrors on every wall. A few girls, practicing on the bars that lined the room, looked up as she entered. Mirrors. Out in the passage, she leaned against the wall and got her breath back. She'd never liked mirrors. They always seemed to be laughing at her. But didn't they say it was the mark of a witch not liking to get between two mirrors? It sucked out your soul or something? A witch would never get between two mirrors if she could help it.
But, of course, she very definitely wasn't a witch. So she took a deep breath and went back into the room. Images of herself stretched away in every direction. She managed a few steps, then wheeled around and groped for the doorway again, watched by the surprised dancers. Lack of sleep, she told herself, and general overexcitement. Anyway, she didn't need to go right into the room, now that she knew who the ghost was. It was so obvious. The ghost didn't require any mysterious, non-existent caves, when all he needed to do was hide where everyone could see him. Mr. Bucket knocked at the door of Salzella's office. A muffled voice said, "Come in." There was no one in the office, but there was another closed door in the far wall. Bucket knocked again and then rattled the door handle. "I'm in the bath," said Salzella.
"Are you decent?"
"I'm fully clothed, if that's what you mean. Is there a pail of ice out there?"
"Was it you who ordered it?" said Bucket guiltily.
"Yes."
"Only I had it taken into my office so I could stick my feet in it."
"Your feet?"
"Yes, I went for a brisk run around the city. Don't know why. Just felt like it.
Well,
my boots, caught fire on the second lap."
There was a sloshing noise and some sotto voce grumbling, and then the door swung open, revealing Salzella in a purple dressing gown.
"Has Signor Basilica been safely tethered?" he said, dripping on the floor.
"He's going through the music with her trouble marker."
"And he's all right?"
"He sent along to the kitchen for a snack."
Salzella shook his head.
"Astonishing."
"And they've put the interpreter in a cupboard. They don't seem to be able to get him unfolded."
Bucket sat down carefully. He was wearing carpet slippers. "And?" Salzella prompted.
"And what?"
"Where did that dreadful woman go?"
"Mrs. Ogg is showing her round."
"Well, what else could I do? I mean, $2,000, remember?"
"I am endeavouring to forget," said Salzella. "I promise never to talk about that lunch ever again, if you don't either."
"What lunch?" said Bucket innocently.
"Well done."
"She does seem to have an amazing effect, though, doesn't she?"
"I don't know who you're talking about.
I mean, it's not hard to see how she made her money."
"Good heavens, man, she's got a face like a hatchet."
"They say that Queen Azariel of Clatch had a squint, but that didn't stop her having 14 husbands. And that was only the official score. Besides, she's knocking on a bit.
I thought she'd been dead for 200 years.
Oh, I'm talking about Lady Esmeralda."
"So am I.
At least try to be civil to her at the soiree before the performance tonight."
"I'll try."
"The 2,000 might only be the start, I hope. Every time I open a drawer, there are more bills. We seem to owe money to everyone."
"Opera is expensive."
"You are telling me. Whenever I try to make a start on the books, something dreadful happens. Do you think I might just have a few hours without something awful happening?"
"In an opera house?"
The voice was muffled by the half-dismantled mechanism of the organ.
"All right, give me a middle C."
A hairy finger pressed a key. It made a thudding noise, and somewhere in the mechanism something else went boing. "Blast, it's come off the peg. Hold on, try again." The note rang out, sweet and clear.
"Okay," said the voice of the man hidden in the exposed entrails of the organ. "Wait until I tighten the peg."
Agnes stepped closer. The hulking figure seated at the organ turned around and gave her a friendly grin, which was much wider than the average grin. Its owner was covered in red hair, and while short-changed in the leg department, had obviously been the first in the queue when the arm counter opened, and had also been given a special free offer of lip.
"André," said Agnes weakly.
The organist extracted himself from the mechanism. He was holding a complicated wooden bar with springs on it.
"Oh, hello," he said.
"Who's this?" said Agnes, backing away from the primeval organist.
"Oh, this is the librarian. I don't think he has a name. He's the librarian at Unseen University, but much more importantly, he's their organist, and it turns out our organ is a Johnson, just like theirs."
Burkholt Stutley, bloody stupid Johnson, was Ankh-Morpork's most famous, or rather most notorious, inventor. He was renowned for never letting his number blindness, his lack of any skill whatsoever, or his complete failure to grasp the essence of a problem stand in the way of his cheerful progress as the first counter-Renaissance man. Shortly after building the famous collapsed Tower of Quirm, he turned his attention to the world of music,
particularly large organs and mechanical orchestras. Examples of his handiwork still occasionally come to light in sales, auctions, and quite frequently wreckage. He's given us some spare parts.
Oh!
Sorry, lent us some spare parts. He plays the organ in an amazingly prehensile way, yes. Agnes relaxed. The creature didn't seem about to attack.
Oh, she said. Well, I suppose it's natural, because sometimes barrel organ men came to our village and they often had a dear little monk.
There was a crashing chord. The orangutan raised its other hand and waved a finger politely in front of Agnes's face.
He doesn't like being called a monkey, said André, and he likes you.
How can you tell?
He doesn't usually go in for warnings.
She stepped back quickly and grabbed the boy's arm. Can I have a word with you? She said. We've only got a few hours and I'd really like to get this...
It's important.
He followed her into the wings. Behind them, the librarian tapped a few keys on the half-repaired keyboard and then ducked underneath.
I know who the ghost is,
whispered Agnes. André stared at her. Then he pulled her further into the shadows.
The ghost isn't anybody, he said softly. Don't be silly. It's just the ghost. I mean, he's someone else when he takes his mask off.
Who?
Should I tell Mr. Bucket and Mr. Salzella?
Who?
Tell them about who? Walter Plinge.
He stared at her again.
If you laugh, I'll kick you, said Agnes.
But Walter isn't even...
I didn't believe it either, but he said he saw the ghost in the ballet school, and there's mirrors all over the walls, and he'd be quite tall if he stood up properly, and he roams around in the cellars.
Oh, come on. The other night I thought I heard him singing on the stage when everyone else had gone.
You saw him?
It was dark.
Oh, well,
André began dismissively.
But afterwards I'm certain I heard him talking to the cat. Talking normally, I mean. I mean like a normal person, I mean. And you've got to admit, he is strange. Isn't he just the sort of person who'd want to wear a mask to hide who he is? She sagged.
Look, I can see you don't want to listen.
No, I think... Well, I just thought I'd feel better if I told someone.
André smiled in the gloom. I wouldn't mention it to anyone else, though. Agnes looked down at her feet. I suppose it does sound a bit far-fetched. André laid a hand on her arm. Perdita felt Agnes draw herself back. Do you feel better? He said.
I don't know. I just can't imagine him hurting anyone.
I feel so stupid.
Everyone's on edge. Don't worry about it.
I'd hate you to think I was being silly.
I'll keep an eye on Walter if you like, he smiled at her. But I'd better get on with things, he added.
He gave her another smile, as fast and brief as summer lightning.
Thank you.
He was already walking back to the organ. This shop was a gentleman's outfitter's.
It's not for me, said Nanny Og. It's for a friend. He's 6 foot tall, very broad shoulders.
Inside leg?
Oh, yes. She looked around the store. Might as well go all the way, it was her money after all. And a black coat, long black tights, shoes with them shiny buckles, one of those top hats, a big cloak with a red silk lining, a bow tie... A really posh black cane with a very knobby silver knob on it. And a black eye patch.
An eye patch?
Yes, maybe with sequins or something on it, since it's the opera. The tailor stared at Nanny.
This is a little irregular, he said. Why can't the gentleman come in himself?
He ain't quite a gentleman yet.
But, madam, I meant that we have to get the size right.
Nanny Og looked around the shop. Tell you what, she said. You sell me something that looks about right, and we'll adjust him to fit. Excuse me. She turned away demurely, twing, twang, twong, and turned back, smoothing down her dress and holding a leather bag. How much shall it be? She said. The tailor looked blankly at the bag.
I'm afraid we won't be able to have all that ready until at least next Wednesday, he said.
Nanny Og sighed. She felt she was becoming familiar with one of the most fundamental laws of physics. Time equaled money. Therefore, money equaled time. I was sort of hoping to get it all a bit quicker than that, she said, jingling the bag up and down. The tailor looked down his nose at her.
We are craftsmen, madam. How long did you think it should take?
How about 10 minutes? 12 minutes later, she left the shop with a large packet under one arm, a hat box under the other, and an ebony cane between her teeth. Granny was waiting outside.
Got it all?
Yes.
I'll take the eye patch, shall I?
We've got to get a third witch,
said Nanny, trying to rearrange the parcels.
Young Agnes has got good strong arms.
You know, if we was to drag her out of there by the scruff of her neck, we'd never hear the last of it, said Granny. She'll be a witch when she wants to be.
They headed for the opera house's stage door.
Afternoon, Les, said Nanny cheerfully as they entered. Stopped itching now, has it?
Marvellous bit of ointment that was you gave me, Mrs. Ogg,
said the stage doorkeeper, his moustache bending into something that might have been a smile.
Mrs. Les keeping well? How's her sister's leg?
Doing very well, Mrs. Ogg. Thank you for asking.
This is just Esme Weatherwax, who's helping me with some stuff, said Nanny.
The doorkeeper nodded. It was clear that any friend of Mrs. Ogg was a friend of his.
No trouble at all, Mrs. Ogg.
As they passed through into the dusty network of corridors, Granny reflected, not for the first time, that Nanny had a magic all of her own. Nanny didn't so much enter places as insinuate herself. She had unconsciously taken a natural talent for liking people and developed it into an occult science. Granny Weatherwax did not doubt that her friend already knew the names, family histories, birthdays, and favourite topics of conversation of half the people here, and probably also the vital wedge that would cause them to open up. It might be talking about their children, or a potion for their bad feet, or one of Nanny's really filthy stories, but Nanny would be in, and after 24 hours they'd have known her all their lives. And they'd tell her things, of their own free will. Nanny got on with people. Nanny could get a statue to cry on her shoulder and say what it really thought about pigeons. It was a knack. Granny had never had the patience to acquire it. Just occasionally she wondered whether it might have been a good idea.
"Curtain up in an hour and a half," said Nanny. "I promised Giselle I'd give her a hand."
"Who's Giselle?"
"She does make-up."
"You don't know how to do make-up."
"I distempered our privy, didn't I?" said Nanny. "And I paint faces on eggs for the kiddies every Soul Cake Tuesday."
"Got anything else, have you?"
said Granny sarcastically.
"Open the curtains. Fill in for a ballet dancer who's been taken poorly."
"I did say I'd help with the drinks at the soiree," said Nanny, letting the irony slide off like water on a red-hot stove. "Well, a lot of the staff have buggered off 'cause of the ghost. It's in the big foyer in half an hour. I expect you ought to be there, being a patroniser."
"What's a soiree?" said Granny suspiciously.
"It's a sort of posh party before the opera."
"What do I have to do?"
"Drink sherry and make polite conversation," said Nanny. "Or conversation, anyway. I saw the grub being done for it. They've even got little cubes of cheese on sticks and stuck in a grapefruit. And you don't get much posher than that."
"Gitter Og, you ain't done any special dishes, have you?"
"No, Esme," said Nanny Og meekly.
"Only you've got an imp of mischief in you."
"Been far too busy for anything like that," said Nanny.
Granny nodded.
"Then we'd better find Grebo," she said.
"You sure about this, Esme?" said Nanny.
"We might have a lot to do tonight," said Granny. "Maybe we could do with an extra pair of hands. Paws. At the moment, yes."
It was Walter. Agnes knew it. It wasn't knowledge in her mind, exactly. It was practically something she breathed. She felt it as a tree feels the sun. It all fitted. He could go anywhere, and no one took any notice of Walter Plinge. In a way, he was invisible, because he was always there. And if you were someone like Walter Plinge, wouldn't you long to be someone as debonair and dashing as the ghost? If you were someone like Agnes Knitt, wouldn't you long to be someone as dark and mysterious as Perdita X Dream? The traitor thought was there before she could choke it off. She added hurriedly, "But I've never killed anyone." "Because that's what I'd have to believe, isn't it? If he's the ghost, then he's killed people. All the same, he does look odd, and he talks as if the words are trying to escape." A hand touched her shoulder. She spun round.
"It's only me," said Christine.
"Oh,
don't you think this is a marvellous dress?"
"What?"
"This dress, silly."
Agnes looked her up and down. "Oh, yes, very nice," she said, disinterest lying on her voice like rain on a midnight pavement.
"Don't sound very impressed. Really, Perdita, there's no need to be jealous."
"I'm not jealous. I was thinking." She'd only seen the ghost for a moment, but he certainly hadn't moved like Walter. Walter walked as though his body were being dragged along by his head, but the certainty was as hard as marble now.
"Well, you don't seem very impressed, I must say."
I'm wondering if Walter Plinge is the ghost, said Agnes, then immediately cursed herself, or at least pooted. She felt embarrassed enough about Andre's reaction. Christine's eyes widened.
But he's a clown.
He walks odd and he talks odd, said Agnes, but if he stood up straight... Christine laughed. Agnes felt herself getting angry. And he practically told me he was.
You believed him, did you?
Christine made a little tutting sound that Agnes considered quite offensive.
Really? You girls believe the strangest things.
What do you mean, we girls?
Oh, you know, the dancers are always saying they've seen the ghost all over the place.
Good grief, do you think I'm some sort of impressionable idiot? Think for a minute before answering.
Well, of course I don't, but...
Agnes strode off into the wings, concerned more with effect than direction. The background noise of the stage faded behind her as she stepped into the scenery store. It didn't lead anywhere except to a pair of big double doors opening into the world outside. It was full of bits of castles, balconies and romantic prison cells, stacked any old how. Christine hurried up behind her.
I really didn't mean... Look, not Walter. He's just a very odd job man.
He does all kinds of jobs. No one ever knows where he is. They all just assume he's around.
All right, but you don't have to get so worked up.
There was the faintest of sounds behind them. They turned. The ghost bowed.